facility for personal relationships. Yet the visceral need was there. He could feel it surging through his body.
After all,
Trudy said, sliding her arms around his neck,
you're not going to go berserk, are you? You've got the roid rage under control, haven't you?
I think so. She giggled.
Maybe not under total control.
He grasped her about the waist and pulled her slim body to him. Maybe not. We'll see. It was in bed, when they were both pleasantly drained and weary, that Trudy asked him,
with the nanos, you'll be able to stop the steroids altogether?
That's what Chris Cardenas says.
That's good, Grant, she said sleepily. I'm happy for you.
And Grant felt happy, too. For the first time since he'd fled from Earth, he felt happy. Investigation. I've got to what? Grant blurted. McClintock had welcomed Grant into his office, and instead of going back to his desk, sat Grant down at the little round table in the corner of the room and pulled up a chair beside him. You've got to find out who infected the Mendeleev site with those nanomachines, McClintock said smoothly. Grant studied the man's amiably smiling face. I've got to find out? Grant asked. Why me? I'm no detective. His smile fixed in place, McClintock ticked off points on his fingers as he explained. One, the nanomachines didn't get there by themselves. Someone planted them at Mendeleev, whether by accident or design. Two, the only people who've been at the site are your people, engineers and technicians. Three, you know them better than Professor Ulrich or I do. You work with them every day. McClintock leaned back in his chair and spread his arms as if he'd proven his case. That makes you the logical person to find out who brought the nanos to Mendeleev. Grant started to snap off a reply but hesitated, thinking, whenever they have a dirty job, they stick me with it. He looked around the room, at the softly glowing wall screens, all of them blank except for the one behind McClintock's desk, which displayed a pastel painting of a leafy green glen 500,000 kilometers away. The desk itself was a standard-issue metal one, but so new there wasn't a scuff mark on it. Its top was clear, bare. No work being done there, Grant thought. Focusing back on McClintock, Grant countered, One, if the person who carried the nanomachines to Mendeleev did it unknowingly, he or she, McClintock interjected. Or she, Grant conceded. Whoever it was, he or she, won't be able to tell us anything if he or she didn't know he or she did it. Before McClintock could reply, Grant went on, and two, if the person did it deliberately, he or she certainly isn't going to admit it. I suppose not, McClintock agreed. So how in hell am I supposed to find out anything? His face growing serious, McClintock said, I'm not a detective either, Grant. But we've got to find out who's responsible for your technician's death, and you're the man who knows your crew best. It's up to you. Why don't you ask Cellini to send some... No, McClintock snapped. The professor has absolutely forbidden us to ask for help from Cellini. This is our problem, and we've got to solve it for ourselves. I don't understand why. Because he doesn't want Cellini shutting down Farside, that's why. Grant muttered. Better to shut down this facility than to have more people killed. Pointing a finger in Grant's face, McClintock said sternly, This is your responsibility, Grant. The fate of this facility and everybody here depends on you. Terrific, Grant thought. Now they want me to be Sherlock Holmes. Aloud, though, he said to McClintock, I'll see what I can do, but I'm not promising anything. McClintock beamed at him, pleased. Just do your best, Grant. I'm sure you'll be able to crack this problem. Grant got to his feet, and McClintock did likewise. Putting out his hand, McClintock said, We're depending on you, Grant, all of us. Grant took the proffered hand, reluctantly. I'll try, he said. Where to start? Grant asked himself as he headed back to the teleoperation center. Most of the Farside staff were members of his crew, 48 engineers and technicians, plus another dozen and a half working on Cyclops. The rest were clerks, paper shufflers, maintenance personnel, and other workmen. There was Dr. Kapstein, Farside's one-person medical staff. and Trudy Yost, the only astronomer on site except for Ulrich himself, and McClintock. Sitting at an unused console in the dimly lit chamber, Grant scrolled through the names. Not Ulrich and not McClintock, he said to himself. I can scratch them off right away. Whoever did it had to have been at Mendeleev at one time or another, Grant realized. How many of my people have even been out there? But then he thought, suppose somebody planted the nanos on one of the guys going out to Mendeleev. It could have been anybody on my crew. It could have been me, he thought. No matter what Chris says, I might have planted the nanos on Wynn when I checked out his suit. He decided to call Chris Cardenas. Christine Cardenas was in her quarters, her travel bag on the bed, packed and almost ready to be zipped up for the return flight to Cellini. Carter McClintock had phoned and asked to see her before she left. As soon as McClintock stepped into her room, he took one glance at the travel bag and said, I've come to ask you to stay, Chris. Stay? I can't stay, Carter, she said. He tried to smile, but it looked forced. We have a crisis on our hands here. A real crisis. We need your help. She shook her head. I can't stay away from my lab indefinitely. I've got a big design conference with Anita Halleck's people tomorrow. It won't be indefinitely, he countered. Probably just a few more days. Cardenas started zipping up her bag. I've got to be back at Cellini tomorrow morning. I'll be available on the phone and by computer link. I can answer your questions from Cellini just as well as I can from here. McClintock frowned slightly. Look, Chris, it's not me. It's Professor Ulrich. The poor man's in a panic. He needs you to stay here and help us find out what's going on. Nothing's going on, she said. You've decontaminated that shelter, haven't you? That's the end of your problem. But how did the nanos get there? Who planted them there? That's our problem. What do you expect me to do about it? Waving a hand in the air, McClintock replied, I don't know. But you're the expert on nanotech, and this is a nanotech problem. Hefting the bag, Cardenas said, No, Carter. It's a human problem. Either a fool or a madman planted disassemblers in that shelter. The nanomachines were merely his weapon of choice. It's exactly the same as if he'd planted a landmine. But she brushed past him, heading for the door. I'm going back to Cellini, Carter. You can talk to me any time you want to. From there. Teleoperations Center. Grant sat at one of the consoles and put in a call to Dr. Cardenas. The teleoperations center was quietly busy, with two teams of techs monitoring the robot's construction work at Korolev and Gagarin, while a third team huddled around Trudy Yost, who was happily operating the Mendeleev telescope. In the bud-sized microphone he had wormed into his ear, Grant heard the phone say, Dr. Cardenas is unavailable. Is she in her quarters? Grant asked, keeping his voice low enough so that he wouldn't disturb the others. The phone's softly feminine voice replied, Dr. Cardenas is unavailable. Privacy protocol, Grant realized. There are no surveillance cameras in the rooms, only out in the corridors and workplaces. He asked for the surveillance command system and quickly scanned through the camera views. And there was Christine Cardenas, marching determinedly along the main corridor with her travel bag in one hand, looking taut, almost angry. McClintock was striding along beside her, talking nonstop, gesticulating with both hands. She's heading for the landing pad, Grant realized. He called up the transportation program and saw that a lobber was due in from Cellini in 20 minutes. Chris is heading back to Cellini and McClintock's trying to talk her out of it. Grant pulled his earbud out, got up from the console and headed for the reception area. The three teleoperations teams sitting at the other consoles barely noticed him leaving. I can't talk to her while McClintock's yammering away at her, Grant told himself. I've got to see her alone. He hustled down the corridor, actually passing Cardenas and McClintock along the way. He nodded a hello to them as he went by. Chris gave him a tight smile. McClintock didn't even blink. He was so intensely pleading with her. Nate Oberman was at the desk in the reception area, looking bored, his chair tipped back and his soft-booted feet on the desktop, watching a video. When he saw Grant enter the little room, Oberman scrambled to his feet, looking surprised and a little guilty. Relax, Nate, said Grant. I've got to get into that lobber as soon as it sits down on the pad, before they begin unloading. Okay, Oberman said uncertainly. Let me use your phone, please. Sure. Oberman cleared his screen, then stepped away.